This podcast is a ministry of Emmaus, a Jesus Church. For more information, visit us at emmausrdu.com.
We are entering into this story, which is the tale of two daughters. And these stories are intertwined with each other. That is, there's some similarities in these stories, both females in the story, both daughters specifically in the story. And both of these women are in the realm of the untouchables. One woman, one little girl, because she's dead, and according to Numbers chapter 19, 11 through 19, dead people were among the untouchables. You would become unclean. The other woman, not because she was dead, but because she was diseased. And according to Leviticus chapter 15, anyone with these type of blood issues would be among the untouchables. And then there is this other parallel, the use of this number 12. Both of these women are a part of this number of years, 12. For one girl, female, daughter in the story, for 12 years, she has been the only daughter of Jairus and her mother. And for 12 years, she has brought them delight as they watched her just grow and be, and the energy that a little girl brings to a home, especially an only child. For 12 years, this little girl has brought joy to her home. But in a moment, all of that comes crashing down. Contrast that with another woman. For 12 years, she has not been experiencing joy, but rather for 12 years, she has been suffering with the disease that has sent her as an outcast and untouchable from society, from her family, from Jewish spiritual life. She's not been able to interact. She hasn't been able to go home, to go to the marketplace, to go to the synagogue for worship. But in a moment, 12 years of misery are all changed. For one family, 12 years of joy in a moment turns to misery. In one story, another story, 12 years of misery in a moment is turned to joy, which reminds us that our lives cannot be built on either our blessings or our traumas, because none of them are permanent. If you're blessed right now, like, that can change, you know that? And if you're in the middle of trauma right now, that can change as well, you know that? See, the Bible says in Proverbs 27:1, do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring. In moments, especially when Jesus is involved, everything can turn around. Now let's sort of get a little bit of the backstory here, a little of the backdrop of what's going on. Jesus has just traveled back to the Jewish side of Lake Galilee. And he's been doing lots of ministry, teaching parables, touching people, dealing with naked demonized guys, all in a day's work for Jesus. And when he arrives, touches down back home, immediately crowds of people come out to meet Jesus. Again, look at verse 40. It says, when Jesus returned, a crowd welcomed him. I mean, the plane's just touched down on the tarmac. The car just pulled into the driveway. He's been out ministering, and right when he gets back home, a crowd welcomed him, for they were all expecting him. This isn't exactly what you want when you're tired, when you've been giving out. And crowds of people have come, lots of needs and diseases, and demon problems, and all of that are a part of the element. But today, out of the sea of people that have come to meet Jesus as he arrives on the other side of Galilee, Jesus has in mind choosing to touch just two daughters. Lots of people, big crowd, but out of that crowd, Jesus has two in mind that he will touch. And in the midst of that crowd comes a man by the name of Jairus. Now, Jairus was said to be a leader in the synagogue. And that would be equivalent to our day saying he was the pastor
of the local church. And Jairus is coming to Jesus in the midst of this crowd, but you have to understand what's been happening here, because, well, Jairus's name, it means, his name actually means, ironically, he will give light. And ironically, at this moment, he is in the dark. His name means he will give light, and he has to go to the one whom John chapter 8 verse 12 says is the light of the world, because life has just suddenly become darkened for him. And at this point in Jesus' ministry, he's sort of got an odd relationship with the synagogue. He's been unofficially kicked out of the synagogue. He's not welcomed there like he was at the beginning of his ministry. And so it's very likely that Jairus would have sort of kept his distance from Jesus, because he's a controversial figure, and Jairus, being a leader in the synagogue, would stay away from Jesus until his daughter became ill. Until his daughter was dying, and now, for Jairus, it's come to Jesus or she's dead. Like, none of the things that used to matter about his social influence, his reputation in the community, the reasons that perhaps Jairus would have stayed away from Jesus, none of that matters now. Because if he doesn't get to Jesus, no amount of money or influence or religious camaraderie is going to raise this little girl up. And so he comes to Jesus, and it says in verse 41 that Jairus, now think, this is a religious leader. This is a pastor, if you would. This is a man who's influential in the community. And he comes humbly, verse 41, he came and fell at Jesus' feet, pleading with him to come to his house. Now, can I say something really quickly to mom and dad, those of you who are parents? If it hasn't happened already, it's going to happen for all of us who are parenting children. Parenting will bring you to your knees, right? Any parents in here go, uh-huh. Yes, sir. Amen. Parenting brings you to your knees, especially when one of your children is not doing so well. Being a pastor since I was 19 years of age, I've encountered this many times, that look of desperation and concern on the face of a parent whose child is not doing well. I'll never forget, we had some friends that had like 5 kids, and they were a great family, big family, Rob and Megan Duncan. And we loved this family. They were great. And I remember finding out that the news had just come to them that their 2-year-old son, Felix, was diagnosed with leukemia. And I remember going into the hospital and looking at Rob and just trying to imagine the kind of horror and desperation that a dad feels when his 2-year-old has just been diagnosed with a life-threatening disease, and there's nothing that daddy can do to fix it. It's that desperation that says, God, help. I can't throw any money at this. Daddy can't fix this boo-boo. We need God's help. I remember another time where there was a young family that was part of our church, Matt and Shasta, and they had already had a little girl, and then they just had another baby girl, and the baby girl had complications, and she ended up in the emergency room. Her life was being threatened. She had all kinds of machines hooked up to her. And I remember standing there in the emergency room with this family, and just that look on mom's face, that look of, Jesus, please, I would do anything right now. And the little girl didn't make it. And I remember preaching at that funeral. I have four healthy children. And so just the shock and the horror of that moment, just the thought of, parents aren't supposed to have to bury their children. The desperation in that. And I think of even part of my own story. Many times looking at my own mother, not because of me, probably a little bit, but that look of desperation that she often had on her face because of the many horrors that my sister had gone through, things that no human being should ever have to go through. And my mom just helpless, wondering, how can I help? Jesus, how can you help in a story like this? So I'm just going to be really open with you. This story has really been messing with me this week. This has not been a fun week. There's been a little bit of gloom because I'm relating to Jairus. I mean, he's a leader in the synagogue and I'm a leader in a church and he's got a 12-year-old daughter and I have a 12-year-old daughter. And I can't even imagine if it was my daughter, Annika, who was dying. The sense of vulnerability and desperation I would feel and the sense that daddy can fix some things, but I can't do anything about this. And it actually got so bad on Friday that I texted my wife. I said, have Annika ready. I just need to spend some time with her. I'm just feeling so like traumatized by the story and the concept of a 12-year-old and losing your little girl. And so I took her to the mall and bought her stuff. Just wanted to spend, and she's like, come on, Dad, just keep reading Jairus. More trips to South Point Mall. But Jairus' only daughter, she's only 12, is dying. And in that ancient culture, at 12 years of age, you're really close to marrying. At 12 years of age, you're at the prime of your life in that culture. And so Jairus is starting to get ready for the day when he'll give his daughter away, the ready for the day when grandbabies come, and all of that is being threatened. All of the things that a dad imagines that one day he'll get to experience with his daughter, all of his future in that is being threatened. But let me remind you of something, and this is going to jar us a little bit, and I want it to jar us. Jairus is desperate because of his daughter's condition. But listen to me. This story is not just about one daughter. Jairus wanted the story to be about just one daughter, his daughter. The crowd wanted the story to be just about their situation. But Jesus was going to minister to somebody else. There was going to come an interruption. The urgency that a desperate father felt was going to be interrupted by another daughter's need. Maybe a need that Jairus would say, that's not as important, not as urgent. And sometimes when it comes to the ministry of Jesus, it's not all about your urgent need. Sometimes, actually, it's not about you at all. Some days, Jesus is going to minister to somebody else in the crowd. And he's going to ask you, can you just stand by and rejoice and witness what I'm doing for someone else? I mean, don't be afraid. Eventually, Jesus is going to minister to all of us in some way. But not every moment is your moment. Not every day is your day. And for Jairus, like the urgency of this moment is interrupted by a second daughter that interrupts. And this woman in verses 43 through 48 interrupts Jesus on his way to heal a dying girl. I mean, imagine this, like the paramedics are headed to your house to resuscitate your daughter, and on the way the ambulance pulls over to help someone else. This is that equivalent, like there's urgency in the air, and here comes this woman. Her condition is also bad. She's been chronically bleeding and hemorrhaging for 12 years. The English Standard Version actually translates verse 43 this way. Though she had spent all her living on physicians, she could not be healed by anyone. Apparently, even in Luke's day, medical bills could bankrupt you. Like, it was still expensive to get medical treatment. And this woman was in a condition. Now she is financially ruined because of her condition. Mark's gospel adds this to the narrative in Mark chapter 5, verse 26. It says about this woman, not only had she spent everything, but she had, Mark 5, 26, had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors. Now, this is the ancient world. Medicine was still very experimental in these days. Doctors still say they have a practice. I don't know if that worries any of you, But I mean, think about, like, you go to see the doctor, he's going to practice on you. He's practicing medicine. Be glad you did not live here in these times. There were some very odd things that they did in the ancient world. And they had prescribed some very odd things for women with chronic bleeding. The Talmud of Babylon actually records some of these odd remedies that were prescribed to women by the ancient doctors. Take of Persian, now imagine if this was the prescription for you. I'm bleeding, doc. Take of Persian onions 9 logs, boil them in wine, and give it to her to drink, and say, arise from thy flux. So boiled onion-flavored wine, right? But should this fail, set her in a place where two ways meet. Now this is classic. And let her hold a cup of wine in her hand, and let somebody come behind and affright her, and say, arise from thy flux. Like startling you into healing with a glass. I don't know why you hold a glass of wine, but you do. And so, I mean, just imagine the things that this woman has gone through. The experimentations, the readjusting her medication, and the doctors trying to prescribe what was wrong with her. Her diagnosis, her prescripted healing medicine still out there. And maybe some of you can understand this. Maybe you have dealt with chronic pain or disease of some sort, and the doctors have continued to experiment and try to figure out how you can get help. They've adjusted your doses. They've reassigned you medication. They've experimented on you, and still, like this woman, you haven't gotten better. Things aren't changing. And so this woman is very, very much been put through just the ringer. She's bankrupt now, and she has just become out of money and out of hope here. And according to Leviticus chapter 15, a woman with this kind of flow of blood would defile anyone and anything that she touched. And this came with great social ramifications. Like, she wasn't allowed in the market. She wasn't allowed in the synagogue. She wasn't allowed religiously or socially to interact with people. So she's isolated, alone. She's a social pariah. She's untouchable. And Mark's gospel tells us that she thought, if I just touch his clothes, I will be healed. Look at verse 44. She came up behind him and touched the edge of his cloak. Now, according to the Jewish New Testament commentary, this woman touched the outer fringe of Jesus' prayer shawl, which they called the tzitzit. Right? There's one to add to your vocabulary, right? Speaking some Hebrew. Like, I thought that was the thing that kids got on their face in puberty, tzitzits. No. Think the prayer shawl, right? The tassels on the prayer shawl. So this woman, it's not like, imagine that she came and touched the hem of Jesus' pant leg. But rather, it's a prayer shawl that would hang over the shoulders and down mid-back. And so this woman came and she touched the borders of his garment, which Numbers 15 tells us that the Israelites, Jewish men, were to put tassels on the borders of their garment, on the corners of their garment, Numbers 15, 37 to 41, so that these tassels on their garment with blue cords in them were there to remind them of all the commandments of the Lord. Now, what this woman did isn't as random as it appears. Like, oh, I'm just going to touch any part of his clothes. She was aiming for the tzitzit. She was aiming for the tassels of his prayer shawl. And there's a little bit of Jewish backstory on this. That is, there was a legend or kind of an understanding among the Jews that when the Messiah came, he would have healing in the tzitzit, in the tassels of his prayer shawl. If you could just go out and touch the tassels of his prayer shawl, you could be healed. And they base that off the last book of the Old Testament, Malachi chapter 4. In Malachi chapter 4, it says, but for you who revere my name, now check this out, the Son of Righteousness, which that's Messiah language, will arise with healing in its rays. That also, maybe some of your translations say healing in his wings. And you will go out and, I like this, this is worth underlining. You will go out and frolic like well-fed calves. If you're ever feeling well happy, like I'm frolicking like a well-fed calf. Life is so good, whatever that looks like. Maybe those of you who have farming backgrounds could tell me what well-fed calves frolic like. But the idea, this isn't as random as it sounds. And it's interesting because this word, healing in his wings or rays, is a Hebrew word, which is the Hebrew word kanaf. And the kanaf was, as I said, the tzitzit. And the Jews believed that when the Messiah came, if you went and touched his kanaf, the tassels on his prayer shawl, you would receive healing. So this woman, based on Malachi chapter 4, Numbers chapter 15, Jesus wearing a prayer shawl, she says, I'm going to go touch the hem of or the tassels on his kanaf. Now healing in his wings, same word used in the Hebrew language as is used in Numbers chapter 15. Tassels of the garment, healing in his wings. So here comes this woman to touch his kanaf. And when she does, look, verse 44, immediately her bleeding stopped. And then Jesus does something. He could have left it there. And that's probably what she would have preferred. But he stops, verse 45, and says, who touched me? Now, they're like in the middle of a mosh pit sort of thing at a good rock show. I mean, it's crowded. The crowds are like pressing against Jesus. And Jesus is like, who touched me? And so Peter does the captain obvious thing. And he says, Jesus, verse 45, Master, the people are crowding and pressing against you. Thanks, big guy. Like, I didn't realize that. Thank you, Peter. What an insight. Who touched me? Jesus, there's a crowd around you. I didn't know that. But then Jesus repeats the question because he's drawing out this woman. Verse 46, he says, someone touched me. I know that power has gone out from me. In other words, it'd be like saying this. In a crowd, many people brushed up against Jesus, but he's saying, no, somebody laid their hand on me. Someone touched the hem of my prayer shawl, the tassel of my prayer shawl, and I felt power go out of me. Now, there's a variety of opinions on what just happened here. Some people would say this is where the human and divine side of Jesus collide. Power went out to heal, but he didn't know who did it. The human and the divine. I'm suggesting to you, Jesus knew exactly who had healed him. He was wanting to call her out. Like, I'm a parent, I get how this works. Like, when I go to Starbucks, sorry for you who don't like Starbucks, I like it. When I go to Starbucks and I get my Venti iced coffee, Three Pumps Classic, non-fat milk, and I bring it home, I have these little creatures that swarm around. Right? And we're like, no caffeine for you. And if I put that Venti iced coffee, Three Pumps Classic, non-fat, best drink Starbucks makes, I set it there, the water running down the side and just the awesome green straw that protrudes out of the top, it's too much for my kids and one child in particular. And so I know pretty much if I come back in, I knew where the level of the coffee was. When the level's down, I know who drank it, because I got one major culprit in the family, right? And the fact that there's like coffee dripping down their lips and they're a little bit more hyper. So when I come in the room, I'm like, all right, who drank my iced coffee? I'm not asking like I don't know. I'm saying, fess up before I call you out. So Jesus comes into the story and he's saying, who touched me? Someone touched me, because I felt power go out. The level went down on my Venti iced coffee. I kind of know somebody touched me. And this woman's like, oh, I know I'm caught. Like, it's all over me. Like, he knows it was me. So Jesus calls her out. She cannot stay hidden. And she comes forward, falls down at Jesus' feet, afraid, trembling. Probably because she doesn't know what the crowd was going to do, because she wasn't supposed to be here. She had no idea what Jesus was going to do. And then she is commissioned to tell her healing story. You know, specifically you ladies, when God touches you, I think it's important that you learn to bear witness of that touch. We need testimonies in church. We need to hear your healing story, your mercy story, your interaction with Jesus. And so this woman is commissioned by Jesus to say, I don't want it to end with just a touch. Tell these people that you've been made whole. Because it's going to be important if you want to be committed, omitted back into society, that they know that you're clean. But it's also going to be important to stir up faith. Let people know your Jesus story. And we'll come back to the significance of Jesus' words to this woman in verse 48. But notice this, right as the words of life and wholeness are coming towards this woman, as these words are being spoken, dark words of hopelessness and death are being delivered concerning Jairus' daughter. So you've got a conflicting story here. One woman is hearing, daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace. Right as that's being spoken, messengers from Jairus' house come to him and say, verse 49, your daughter is dead. It's not good bedside manner. Don't bother the teacher anymore. Right as those words are being spoken, Jesus is speaking words of wholeness and life to one woman. Words of death are being spoken to someone else. And Jesus heard what was being said to Jairus. And look at what he does in verse 50. He turns to Jairus to reassure him. Don't be afraid. Just believe and she will be healed. Jairus, don't listen to the voices. Believe my voice. Now, I have this favorite song, one of my favorite worship songs. And I like this song for one line in particular. And it's this line in the song, and it says, may your voice be louder, may your voice be clearer than all the others in my life. I could sing that all day. You wouldn't want to hear it, but I could sing that. Because I get Jairus right here. Other voices have come in. Your daughter's dead. Don't bother the teacher anymore. You don't need to pray anymore. You don't need to plead anymore. It's over, Jairus. Death has put a stop to what Jesus can do. And Jesus has said, Jairus, don't be afraid. Only believe. She's going to be healed. But it looks like it's over. But Jesus would say to us, you've seen what I've done for others. You've seen what I've done with another daughter. Trust what I can do with your daughter. When it looks like it's over and hopeless and things are far gone, you have Jesus' words and Jesus' works to hold on to. You know what he said and you know what he's done for other people. And so Jesus, I think, would say to even us today, trust me with your life. Don't be afraid, only believe. Trust me with your life. Know what I've said and know what I have done for other people. So when they get to Jairus' house, like a full funeral has broke out. Like in that day, if you had enough money, when anybody in your family died, you would hire mourners. So these people were waiting. They knew that this little girl was on her deathbed. And so they were ready. And so when Jesus comes, they've already started the funeral. And actually, Matthew's gospel says that the flute players were already playing the funeral dirge. And Jesus comes in to this situation and he says to them, notice verse 52, she is not dead, but asleep. He says, stop the crying. She's not dead, but she is asleep. What is death to us is only sleep to Jesus. And when the New Testament refers to death as it concerns a Christian, it always uses the metaphor of sleep. We sleep in Jesus. Death is not final for a Christian. And so Jesus essentially is saying, I'm going to wake up the sleeping girl. Now with that idea of death, the reality is none of us are afraid of sleep. A lot of people are afraid of death. But for a follower of Jesus, you don't need to be afraid. Are you afraid of naps? I'm afraid to not get one. I mean, are you concerned when your wife says to you or your friend says to you or someone says, hey, I'm going to turn in for the night. Oh, no! Panic! It's going to be the end. No. And then in that same way, as a Christian, death is sleep. Death is not permanent. Death is a nap. Death is bedding down for the night. You shouldn't be concerned about going to bed. You shouldn't be concerned about sleep. And in that same way, Jesus says, hey, look, I'm going to go wake a sleeping girl. She's not dead. She's sleeping. And so these unbelieving mourners begin to laugh at Jesus because he describes death as sleep. And so you know what Jesus does? He leaves them outside. Y'all can stay out of the house. And you know, sometimes there are people in your life you got to do this with. I love you, but right now I need faith. Stay out of the house. And you notice who Jesus allows to be in the house as he's about to do a miracle? Only people that believe. Peter, James, John, his inner three, and then the mother and father. These are the only ones allowed. Everyone else laughing, mocking, not believing, out. And there are times when you go through things that are so tremendous that you need to pull in your core. I think everyone needs a three-person core. People that are like, I believe and I will trust and I will believe God to raise dead things in your life. Like, we need friends like that. Give me more friends like that. Then I have to recognize there are some people in my life, and I'm like, you get to stay out of the house. But there are some people, when trauma hits, they're the people I go to battle with. And as the unbelievers are outside, Jesus comes in and he does something so beautiful. Mark's gospel actually tells us that when he came to this little girl, he includes the Aramaic word. He said to this little girl, Talitha kum, which is the same exact phrase that her mother would use when waking her up in the morning. When you imagine raising the dead, you think of some traumatic gyration, some powerhouse of a preacher with a sweat cloth and a fancy suit and all that. Jesus walked in like mom would come in to wake the little girl up. Now I have kids, and when they were little especially, I loved waking them up. You walk in, you tap on their back. Sweetheart, get up. It's time for the day to begin. It's morning time. And they just kind of, wake up. You know, and they're so cute when they're little. When they get to be teenagers, when you wake them up, it's like a war. No, Dad, get out of here. Jesus comes in and says, Talitha kum. He takes her by the hand and he lifts her out of bed, and her spirit returned to her. And then Jesus ordered room service, right? Feed her. Like, there's nothing like being raised from the dead to work up an appetite. Beautiful story. And this story is an illustration of what happens when God's kingdom breaks in. What the kingdom does when it comes into a broken world. You notice what happens on both societal rungs of the ladder? At the bottom rung is this woman with an issue of blood. Jesus comes in and he touches her. At the top of the social rung of the ladder is the daughter of an important religious leader. Jesus touches her. The similarities between us, aside from socioeconomics, are not very much. We all need Jesus. Poor and rich. The haves and the have-nots. Top of the rung of the ladder societally, bottom of the rung of the ladder societally. There are things we all realize that we can't handle without Jesus. There was no medicine or no money that could do only what Jesus was able to do for the daughters in this story. This was a healing only Jesus could bring. And to the daughters of God that happened to show up to the Art Center on this Sunday morning, I want to stand with you and believe God with you today that like this woman, this daughter with a chronic issue, ostracized and lonely, that with you, daughters of God, you women in particular, the sisters in the house in particular, I'm believing with you today that with Jesus, this could be for you the end of anonymity. What do I mean by that? Think about this woman. She had issues. She needed Jesus. But she was going to go in the middle of a crowd and remain anonymous. She was going to be a consumer of Jesus' touch. But Jesus is not interested in keeping you only a consumer of his touch. She had issues. Some of you have issues. But the greatest concern in Jesus' heart and life as it concerns you is not that you get your touch, but that you know him and are known by him. Sure, he wants to touch you. Absolutely. But if that's all you're after, Jesus is after more. He's always after more with you. The issues that you face are only a catalyst to bring you into Jesus so that he can touch you. And so Jesus calls this woman out to do what? To identify her as a daughter. Because our Father is not just an impersonal force. He's not like, you know, Star Wars theology. Use the Force. Jesus wasn't a master Jedi that knew how to use the Force better than others. Our Father is very personal, and he wanted to be personal with this woman. And so the divine has come close. She says, if I could just touch him, that's all I'll need. And Jesus says, no, you need more than that. You need to know and be known by me when the divine comes close. Like, I love one translation of the Bible. Some of you guys would be like, you heretic. Not the New World Translation, don't worry. But one of my favorite translations of the Bible was put together by Eugene Peterson. And Eugene Peterson put together a Bible called The Message. Yeah, some of you, only one person likes it. Thank you. When they start throwing rocks, we'll huddle together. But in Eugene Peterson's translation, he says this in John chapter 1, verse 14. I love this. Talking about the divine coming close, he said, the word became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood. I like that. Jesus didn't want to stay a far, impersonal force. And from time to time, yes, we do need a touch from the Lord, but more than anything, Jesus is wanting to speak wholeness over us. Look at what the wholeness that Jesus speaks over this woman in verse 48. This is important. Look at verse 48. For you, especially for you women today, I believe God has this word for you. Notice verse 48, he starts off, daughter. I want you to note that, ladies. This is the only time in the New Testament that a woman is called daughter. This is the only woman in the New Testament who's called daughter. He's specially, specifically, personally calling her, you are a daughter. And he says to her, verse 48, your faith has healed you. Now note that word healed. It's the Greek word sozo. It's also translated in Luke chapter 7, verse 50, in Jesus' touching of the sinful woman. Jesus said to that woman, he said, your faith has saved you. To this woman, he says, your faith has healed you. Same word in the Greek, sozo. Your faith has sozoed you. In other words, your faith has given you holistic life. Total life in body and soul. That's the work of Jesus. That's the wholeness that Jesus is speaking over this woman. Your faith has made you whole in body and soul and relationships. I'm healing everything about you. You're not just a body. You're not just a spirit. You have all kinds of parts of you. And Jesus has come to give you sozo. Daughter, your faith has healed you sozo. And then he says to her, go in peace. And this peace is the idea, the Hebrew idea of shalom. May you be right in every way. That's the prophetic wholeness that Jesus wants to speak over daughters here today. May you be whole in every way. Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace. Be whole in every way. Experience sozo life, shalom life. Because you're a daughter of the Father. And I want you to receive that identity this morning. Listen, sisters, daughters of Jesus, listen to me. Carnal culture, crude culture, has given you an identity. It's beauty and body. not so crude culture, normal culture, has also defined you. Success in your vocation, the kind of home that you live in, the husband that you marry, the children that you have, all of that, that's your identity. And you have also some identities that you have given to yourself, some expectations of yourself. I must succeed. I must be beautiful. And Jesus comes to this woman and he gives her daughter. He says nothing about beauty, nothing about body, nothing about what kind of homemaker, nothing about what kind of wife, nothing about what kind of anything that she's done. Because understand, this woman had all of that stripped away from her by her disease. She had no husband. He couldn't touch her. She couldn't interact with children. She didn't have a home. She didn't have friends. She didn't have a church life. But she had, now she had daughter. And ladies, I would to God that you could receive daughter today. Jesus is going to add it all back to her. He's going to give her back what the disease stole. But before that, he was giving her something that a disease could never take from her. She would always be daughter. She may not always be mother. She may not always have the body and the beauty and the home and all those things that the culture and even you have said to yourself, you've bought into the lie that says, I am a body and I'm a beauty and I am who I'm married to and I am what kind of job I do. No, that can be taken from you. Daughter cannot be taken from you. This morning he calls you daughter. He's father. He wants to know you, and he wants to give to you something that nothing could ever take from you. But then, with this holistic healing and wholeness that he brings her, the sozo shalom, also with that, she got back her life. She got to go home. She got to go back to church. She got to go back to the grocery store, which some of you ladies are like, oh, yeah. She got to go back to South Point. She couldn't go there before. But not before she got daughter. It's the end of anonymity. Not anonymity, do people know you? Because sometimes your issues keep you from intimacy with other people. That's true. But before that, you need to know and be known by the Father. And he's calling daughters today. If you don't have that identity, whether it is because you're not a Christian or it's because you have let yourself and the culture define you, and your identity's all messed up. Today, I'm saying from Jesus, you're a daughter. But it's a story about two daughters. For the first daughter, with Jesus, it's the end of anonymity. For the second daughter, and I'll be brief here, this would be the end of anxiety. If you were Jairus and your daughter is dying, you know this. Jesus isn't hurrying enough. The issue is urgent, and he's been stopped by this woman. And then, as all of this is traumatically causing anxiety in Jairus, the worst thing that we think could happen does happen, and that is he gets news that it's over, she's dead, don't bother the teacher anymore. And I just want to speak again to the daughters of God this morning. For those of you who feel anxious because you feel like opportunity to be and do is passing because the clock is ticking. You know, Jesus is not worried about time. Seconds and minutes and hours and days and weeks and months and years. He, unlike you, is not parametered by those things. So in Jairus' mind, we're running out of time. In your mind, when things aren't happening, my biological clock is ticking. Or when is this ministry? Or when is this vocation? Or when is this opportunity going to open up? In Jesus' mind, he's more interested in your character development than he is about your calendar. Than he is about you thinking, man, another birthday clicked off and I'm still not where I want to be. I mean, how many friends do I have? And do you have that we sit down and we start talking with each other and then age comes up? And then somewhere in the conversation, I've heard this from a lot of men especially, man, this isn't where I thought I'd be at this stage in my life. I wanted to be further financially, vocationally, in ministry, in every way. I wanted to have a family and all that, and I haven't reached my goals. And I'm wondering what Jesus is doing. I wonder, my clock's ticking. Jesus isn't concerned about that. And then this beautiful thing happens. Jesus, who's not concerned about time, and you're like, you don't seem to be either, preacher. I'm not. I'm being like Jesus, not concerned about time. I'm going to be done with this point. Jesus steps into this scenario where it seems like time is running out. And Jesus would say, don't be anxious. Don't be worried. Time doesn't matter to me. And he goes, and in this beautiful picture of resurrection, he comes to this little girl, Talitha Kum. Wake up, sweetheart. It's time to get up. The first voice that she hears is Jesus. The first face that she sees is Jesus. The first touch that she feels is Jesus. That's resurrection. When this life is over, all of your dreams, listen to me, all of your dreams and hopes and desires are going to be fulfilled. Every one of them. The question is, will it be on this side or the other side of resurrection? Truth is, we're all waiting for something on the other side. And resurrection is going to sleep into the place wherein Jesus will be the first one to greet you when you wake up. And then he says, feed her breakfast. This is Revelation 19, right? This is what we're awaiting, the day when Jesus will share with us the marriage supper of the Lamb. That's what we're awaiting. So daughters today, specifically you ladies today, daughters of Jesus, no more anonymity. Issues gone. Anonymity gone. He calls you daughter. Receive that identity today. Be made whole of your issues today. And no more anxiety over the goals that you haven't reached so far. But I'm 21. I know it seems like you're an old lady. Believe me. Someone who's really old, 36, whoo. Jesus isn't concerned about your biological clock. Ask Sarah and Abraham. So today you can relax in the presence of the Lord. And know this, if God has intended it for you, it will be realized, whether on this side or the other side of the resurrection. Let's pray. Father, I'm just wanting to pray right now for the ladies that you have brought here this morning, daughters of yours. And I'm believing, Lord, that you want to specifically touch the women here. And at whatever level this story meets them, whether it be that they do have some physical ailments. And Father, I pray that the power to heal would be in this place this morning, and you would lay your hands as women go out to reach your tassels on your garment, that they would reach out for you and be made whole. But Lord, I know there are also emotional issues, and there are issues of identity here. Just bad definition of who these women are. And I pray today that daughter would be the identity of the ladies here. That anxiety about how much time it's taking would all be put out. And that today, in this gathering, that something special would take place. As we go to the table and literally reach out for you. And then as we gather the prayer team, Lord, I pray today that a lot of women, that actually all the women that are here right now, that we would have 100% success rate, 100% wholeness. No more issues, no more anonymity, no more anxiety. Daughters of God, arise in the name of Jesus.